This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and happy Friday. What is up, guys? We have much to discuss today. Starting off with J.K. Rowling, who says she is not going to accept an apology from Daniel Radcliffe or Emma Watson on the topic of all the gender theory and gender confusion and is a man, is a woman, all this different stuff that she's been talking about most recently. She says she doesn't want to hear from the cast of Harry Potter, and we'll talk about exactly why. Plus, it was announced today that O.J. Simpson is deceased. Did he do it? Did he not do it? We'll get into a brief discussion about that. Plus, a lady on CNN says, you know, a really interesting part of O.J. Simpson's case and why he is somewhat of an icon for black people, I guess, is because two white individuals died in this case. We're going to unpack that comment and see if there's anything really there. Plus, do we have a new George Floyd in 2024 by the name of Dexter Reed, who was shot and killed by police? And we have the media sort of spinning a tale on the death of Dexter Reed. We're going to clear all that up today, and we're going to find out some interesting details that the media might not be wanting to tell you about this case. Plus, amongst, you know, Ben Affleck and Jennifer Garner and J-Lo, we have two kids. Now, Ben Affleck's two kids, one is non-binary, and apparently one is now trans slash non-binary possible. Possibly, what are the odds that something like that takes place in one household? All these things we're going to discuss today, but before we get into them, we have Taylor in Nashville.
Hey, yeah, we're loaded with stories today. It feels like any of these could have been a full show, and yet we have to cram them all into this Friday show. So happy Friday, everyone. Thanks for kicking off your weekend with us, and yeah, let's get into it.
Yes, you know we're going to do this to the best of our abilities. Now let's talk about the queen, the icon, the moment that is J.K. Rowling. A lot of you are fans of her because of her Harry Potter series, which of course created her rise to prominence and had her set for life. And now that she's set for life, she is hammering everybody about gender theory, gender ideology, from the stance of wanting to protect women, protect their spaces, and protect their rights. We've covered her many times on this show, and she just continues to spit fire on any given day. Recently, we spoke about Scotland's new hate crime law that would allow people to report others for instances of hate speech, including misgendering. Since that law went into place in Scotland, guess how many reports have been made to accuse J.K. Rowling of breaking that law? Over 8,000. Since the day that that hate crime law was enacted, over 8,000 reports were made with J.K. Rowling's name in mind, accusing her of breaking this law. A lot of people want to see this woman in jail. Now, two people who could maybe be in the midst of wanting to see her canceled and wanting to see the downfall of J.K. Rowling are Daniel Radcliffe and Emma Watson. If you're familiar with those two individuals, of course, as Harry Potter and Hermione, you may not be familiar about their stances on J.K. Rowling, since she's spoken out about gender ideology and her view that a man is a man and a woman is a woman, and wanting to protect women's rights and spaces. They seemingly don't agree with her. And Daniel Radcliffe, I believe, has been one of the most open cast members about his lack of shared belief with J.K. Rowling on this subject matter. Now, I think what we're going to see here is a pendulum swing amongst many people. And we've already seen it with J.K. Rowling's name in particular. As she starts to uncover more, she's sort of fighting these hate crime laws. She's talking about all the different crimes that have been committed by those identifying as transgender that are now being booked in a system as female crimes. She's showing evidence of how this ideology is truly detrimental to society. And people are starting to wake up and realize maybe, you know, she had a point. And she made that point at a time that people were not ready to hear it. Now, somebody tweeted out under the name Adam Harris about J.K. Rowling, saying, "Waiting for Dan and Emma to give a very public apology, safe in the knowledge that you will forgive them." And J.K. Rowling responded, said, "Not safe, I'm afraid. Celebs who cozied up to a movement intent on eroding women's hard-won rights and who use their platforms to cheer on the transitioning of minors can save their apologies for traumatized detransitioners and vulnerable women reliant on single-sex spaces." So, yikes, you know, she's essentially saying, save your words. I'm not the one who needs to hear them. There are far more important people when it comes to this issue that I think would utilize your apology and definitely need to hear it way more than I do. In the case of Daniel Radcliffe, you'll remember that he did this whole campaign with the Trevor Project, I believe, where he went and sat down with young transgender youths, all of whom were minors, and sat and talked to them and asked them questions about their transition, very clearly with an endorsement of transitioning minors and wanting to fight and advocate for laws that protect minors who want to transition and allow them to receive medical care. And when I say medical care, I mean hormone replacement therapy, I mean sex reassignment surgery, and essentially, you know, the mutilation of young children's bodies. That's what Daniel Radcliffe was advocating for. And we know that this was responsive to J.K. Rowling, because virtually none of these celebrities were really taking strong stances on this issue until J.K. Rowling came out and stated what she had to state and what she wanted to say about this topic. And in a retaliatory fashion, they all decided to make public posts and talk about how they denounced J.K. Rowling, even though they were members of the Harry Potter cast. Now, of course, so many people are making the point that Daniel Radcliffe and Emma Watson would have no shoebox really to stand on right now, or soapbox, should I say. They would have nothing to stand on had J.K. Rowling not even created Harry Potter and, you know, played a role in them being cast in these pivotal roles. Nonetheless, they still get to have their opinions and respond to J.K. Rowling. But you know what? She's saying, when you do come around, and I'm sure you will, that's how much she's standing on business, on what she believes, and how much she truly believes that the world is going to see that this was a really dark point in history when it came to the healthcare provided for children, if we can even call it that. She says, when you finally realize, which you will, do not come talking to me about it. Which, you know, from my personal opinion, I think there's time to change your mind. There's time to learn new things. And I think there's a lot of people who will have advocated for the transitioning of children, and they're going to realize this was not something that they should have advocated for, and they're going to turn the corner on that. And you know what? I'm willing to accept people who recognize that, and especially those who apologize and say, you know what? I said this at one point in my life. I wasn't particularly informed on what I was saying, or the information that I received was not the proper information when it comes to this subject matter, and I apologize for that, and I've turned the corner on it. I'm fully willing to accept it. Now, J.K. Rowling might not be so willing, because there was a direct attempt to cancel her in the wake of what she said. There was a direct attempt to deplatform her. Many were calling for her being ousted when it comes to Harry Potter projects, even though she created the story and the tale that everybody is so entertained by, that everybody wants to spend their money on, that everybody wants to read and watch and go to Harry Potter world. That was her creation. And they decided to abandon her in the wake of what she was saying. So I can imagine there's a little bit of animosity there. But I do like that she's pointing them in the direction of, okay, don't apologize to me. Apologize to the true victims of the ideology that you are supporting. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it seems like it's always the right approach is to highlight harm. And that is when you have a grievance, when you have an issue that you're advocating for, just show the harm that is being caused by the bad ideas, the bad policies, the bad ideologies or causes that people are supporting. And so J.K. Rowling is certainly right to redirect any animosity to enhance or ameliorate the situation of those affected by the bad ideas. But this whole conversation is kind of like a giant hypothetical, because neither Dan nor Emma has apologized to this point, or have given any inkling, as far as I can tell, of regret over having supported or advocated for child transitions or the encroachment of trans people into women's spaces. And until there is any sort of regret expressed or any sort of apology, then this is kind of a moot conversation. But right. I do, to your point, think that, you know, J.K. Rowling strikes me as such a reasonable, charitable sort of person, that if they were to come on their hands and knees, and if they were to take up the cause of detransitioners and show actual remorse and say, oh my gosh, I can't believe I supported this thing that is now demonstrably causing harm, that all these major medical institutions are turning on at this point, that have been, that this ideology that has all but been discredited, of course I'm going to take ownership over that and advocate to reverse any damage that I've done and use my platform for good. Like, I think J.K. Rowling would be pretty amenable to that. I think she'd be willing to lock arms with them at that point. But I do understand the reticence to just come out and say, because it gives me the same energy as, like, we watch those Bill Maher clips of people, like liberals post-COVID, who years later are like, yeah, I kind of regret supporting the shutdown of my child's school. I was on the school board, and I'm sorry, but, you know, can't we all just kind of move along? And, you know, Barry Weiss, even when she was on there talking about, you know, she was done with COVID regulations when we'd all been screaming about them for months and months. And it's like, you saw this preventable harm. Now all of a sudden you get to come out and say you're against it, which, again, Dan and Emma haven't even done yet. But I could see the reticence to be so ready to embrace people. But I think ultimately, as a Christian and just as like a reasonable person, I think you should be willing and ready to accept apologies and move on. But a lot depends on the manner in which people are changing course, which, again, they haven't even begun to do yet.
Yeah, we'll see on that one. And I'm sure she'll be charitable if there ever is a turning of the leaf from Emma or from Daniel. I will remind you guys that the actress who played Luna Lovegood, who was played by Ivana Lynch in Harry Potter, she had initially come out against J.K. Rowling in the wake of everything that was happening and the heat that she was receiving and the backlash that everybody was throwing at her. And she joined the mob that came after J.K. Rowling. And later on, she realized, oh, I might have been a little bit too soon in making a judgment on J.K. Rowling, and ended up sort of taking that back and saying, you know, upon reflecting and taking in more information, I actually take back what I said. And that was one of the cast members who, you know, decided, after a little bit of thinking, a little bit of reflection, I'm going to come back and I'm going to, you know, set the record straight a little bit. So there's room for that to happen. Now, I don't know about J.K. Rowling's current relationship with her as an actress, but I'm sure, as I've seen many other people come back and apologize to J.K. Rowling, and she said, okay, you know what? I appreciate the apology. Thank you for, you know, doing this after publicly bringing me down on the internet. I can appreciate when somebody turns the leaf and changes their mind. Now, in other news, it was announced today, or yesterday, I don't know exactly the timeline on things, but that O.J. Simpson has passed away and believed lost his battle with prostate cancer. He passed away on April 10th, and the internet has been going crazy. It seems to be a pretty widely held belief that O.J. Simpson is guilty. I would like to hear from you guys in a poll down below. Of course, he was in a trial for having killed his former spouse, Nicole Brown, as well as another man who was a waiter at Mezzaluna, who was at her house at the time of these murders. And these were really heinous, and I mean heinous murders. People at the scene said that this was just egregious what had happened to the two victims in this case. Now, CNN decided to cover OJ and the trial of the century. We're going to hear what this lady on CNN had to say about OJ, and we'll unpack it and we'll go from there.
But it was so racially charged because of what had happened just before with Rodney King, but also just how Black Americans feel about policing. It's not like O.J. Simpson was the leader of the civil rights movement of his era. You right. know, he wasn't a social justice leader, but he represented something for the black community in that moment, in that trial, particularly because there were two white people who had been killed. And the history around how black people have been persecuted during slavery, there were just so many layers. And I guess I would just close with this, is that there was racial tension then, there is racial tension now. It might not be the backdrop of the Trump campaign, but until this country is ready to actually have an honest conversation about the racial dynamics from our origin story till today, we will always have moments like O.J. Simpson that manifest, and our country will always be divided if we don't actually deal with the issue of race.
Okay. I gotta be honest, I have no clue what point she was trying to make in this video. I have absolutely no clue what she was trying to say, that this is an important case because two white people were slain. I guess she's trying to say that because of the nature of the case, there was, a racial dynamic involved right from the start. And, you know, if you guys look into the O.J. Simpson case, honestly, a lot of the reason why he may have been acquitted is because they had recordings of one of the police officers and reports of one of the police officers who was heavily invested in the case and in the investigation that he was racist and he was throwing out racial slurs and sort of talking about police brutality in a way that communicated to people that he was racist. And that led to a lot of confusion as to whether or not to convict O.J. Simpson in the case. So maybe that's what she's talking about. But I will say, at the very least, this is very poorly worded, and you can sort of see as the panel on the news goes, huh? And they're kind of all just like silent in response to what she's saying, because I don't know what you respond to that and what you're supposed to say. So this is going viral, and essentially people are saying, I'll pull it back up for you guys and give you the message that people are sharing with this particular video. They're saying that this CNN reporter says that the black community felt represented by OJ because he killed white people. Now, I don't know if that's exactly what she was trying to say in the video. I'm honestly trying to be charitable, and that she's not saying that the black community felt represented by him because he's like an icon for killing white people. I think she was trying to more talk about the racial dynamic that is infused within a case when it is a black perpetrator and white victims. But my girl, she should have run the dialogue by somebody before she said it out loud, if I'm being honest. Taylor, I don't know if you've interpreted this in any other way. I think it's just her misspeaking, but I don't know. I don't know.
It sounds like a word salad of somebody who is very much bought into racialized narratives and looks at the world through that lens. And that's as much as you probably need to know to recognize that whoever decided that this woman needed to go on CNN and use their platform to speak to this case or this development of OJ's death nationally was not somebody who made a great decision. And look, to me, this just demonstrates that, you know, 30 years later, however long it's been, America has not really made progress from its ability to deal with issues that revolve around justice with a colorblind lens, right? Like the cut and dry facts of the case. I mean, they're hard to discern now, right? Even after all this time, we were talking a little bit about it before the show, but basically if he was acquitted due to incompetence or corruption on the part of the investigators, then that happens in the legal system. And that is an outcome that happens. Guilty people can walk because people mishandled the case that were responsible to handle evidence properly or whatever it may be. And that's a reality. That's just on the corruption or the incompetence of the investigators. But if he was acquitted because of racial dynamics infused into the narrative and people ignored evidence or ignored truths that they had a duty not to ignore purely because of racial dynamics, then that is a corruption of justice. And that is how we should look at it. And to me, that's clear as day. We don't, you know, it is obviously we can acknowledge that there's racial tension around this issue. There's racial tension infused into this issue. But when it comes to making a judgment on justice, like we should have be colorblind in that regard. And it just shows me that even after all this time, we continue to look through the lens of race at issues of justice when we should just be colorblind in that regard.
Yeah, and there was a lot going on at the time of this case. One of you requested in the comments down below, Amala, can you show the Oprah audience clip of when OJ's verdict came out in real time in 1995? And this is where the audience found out that he was, in fact, going to be, you know, out and free after this. You guys can take a look and see if you notice any particular dynamics at play.
In case number BA097211. We, the jury, in the above entitled action, find the defendant, Orenthal James Simpson, not guilty of the crime of murder in violation of Penal Code Section 187A, a felony upon Nicole Brown Simpson, a human being, as charged in count one of the information. Superior Court of the State of California, County of Los Angeles, in the matter of the people of the State of California versus Orenthal James Simpson. We, the jury, in the case number.
So there you go. There's kind of like at the time it was said that there were a lot of different if you broke down the people who viewed him innocent or guilty on the basis of race, it was by and large that black people thought that O.J. Simpson was not guilty and white people thought that he was guilty. There was a lot of different things happening at the time. This was on the heels of the Rodney King case that brought about all the L.A. riots and just crazy stuff. So there was a lot of racial tension at the time, plus finding out that they had recordings of this police officer using racial slurs and talking about police brutality. That didn't help the case whatsoever. I believe on his jury, there was like 8 black people on the jury as well. I don't think it was a healthy mix of what the population actually was at the time. So a lot of things not exactly going right, or a lot of things that could really muddy the waters when it comes to having a fair trial in this case. You guys, at a rate of 91%, believe that O.J. Simpson was guilty. 9% of you say he was not guilty. Honestly, like, the evidence in this case is pretty staggering toward him being the guilty party and the perpetrator, but there are clearly missteps. The police officers were accused of contaminating the evidence and not properly bagging all of the evidence, and just little missteps along the way that I do think can instill a reasonable doubt within the people who are hearing the evidence and learning about the case. And that is really what law is about and what a trial is about at the end of the day. So had there not been these sort of racial elements, plus the slurs from the cop, plus the possible mishandling of evidence, I feel like he would have went away. He would have went away. Not to mention he had a long history of abusing that woman and was actually, I believe, convicted of spousal abuse. And they held him accountable, or I guess responsible, for the deaths in a civil court, I believe, when looking at the case of Nicole Brown and Rod Goldman. So y'all have to let me know how you feel. It seems like overwhelmingly you guys feel that O.J. Simpson was guilty, but now he is deceased. I saw that Caitlyn Jenner came out and said, you know, good riddance on Twitter in finding out the news about O.J. Simpson. And Caitlyn Jenner has stood 10 toes down on the fact that O.J. Simpson did kill both of them, and you know, stated that that was the case and that Nicole had known that that was going to happen. Very interesting stuff. It's a devastating case to sort of like hear about, and then, you know, what a tragic way to go out, and then to not really have real justice on the other end of it is a very difficult thing. But that's the update. Now, in speaking about racist police, the racial tension that fuels a lot of the media and a lot of our political conversations in this country has not gone away. And we have a story that highlights exactly that in what is trying to be spawned as sort of a new George Floyd right now in the year 2024. And that is the death of Dexter Reed. You're going to see a lot of headlines like this one that says police fire 96 shots in 41 seconds, killing black man during traffic stop. With this photo of Dexter Reed and some family members, you're going to see some news clips that look like this one.
He had just bought his new car 3 days before that, and he was just riding around in his car. He said, "Mom, I'm going for a ride." And they killed him.
Okay, so that's painting a particular story there. Let's see another clip of Dexter Reed's mother on CNN.
They took my son away from me. He ain't got that no more. I don't know what I'm gonna do without him. He's already dead. Why you study shooting him like that? They killed my son and they killed me too.
Okay. So you're going to see the stuff. It says, you know, 96 shots, 41 seconds, multiple officers involved in the death of Dexter Reed. And you're going to get a majority of headlines, I think, right now, until we clear this up. And we're going to do that very shortly, where they say, you know, this guy was killed during a traffic stop. And I can't believe your crime really is living while black, which is what a lot of people say when stuff like this and stories like this come out. And he just wasn't wearing a seatbelt. This was a routine traffic stop. How dare you kill a black man? This is clearly the result of, you know, racist officers who decide to commit crimes. But it turns out Dexter Reed had a firearm and decided to shoot at police officers first, actually striking one of the officers in the arm. And for some reason, that's not being placed at the forefront of the stories when they're being talked about, when they're being reported on. I'm actually going to show you some headlines here. And a big shout out to Jesse Waters of Fox News for pointing this out and sharing this in his coverage of Dexter Reed's death.
After he was pulled over, he shot at police first, and they returned fire. His gun was recovered, and he'd emptied his clip. Look at these headlines. Seatbelt violation ends with black man dead on Chicago street after cops fired nearly 100 bullets. Police fire 96 shots in 41 seconds, killing black man during traffic stop. Deadly Chicago traffic stop where police fired 96 shots raises serious questions about use of force. Not one of those headlines tells you that Reed is the one who started the shootout.
I'm personally devastated to see yet another young black man lose his life during an interaction with the police.
All Reed had to do was comply.
It seems like in looking at this case that that is in fact true, that all this individual had to do was comply. And I had sort of had whispers about this happening. I'll tell you a little brief story. Somebody called me and said, you know, I just got off a call with somebody who actually works in Chicago and is part of like community relations in Chicago. And this person who was part of community relations in Chicago called them and said, oh my gosh, tomorrow's gonna be, you know, a hellish day. I think there's gonna be riots in the streets. There's gonna be protests. You know, this is gonna be the next George Floyd. Everybody's gonna be up in arms over what just happened. I can't tell you what it is, but the body cam footage is being released and this looks horrible for police. This is a horrible, heinous act of police brutality. And presumably this person had seen the body cam footage and knew about the investigation and the reporting surrounding, you know, this traffic stop internally from the police themselves. Come to find out, the very next day, this is released, the investigation notes and what they found during this investigation is released, and Dexter Reed fired first at the police officers. Not only that, emptied a clip. So who knows, you know, how many of those shots he is responsible for. I think the investigation is ongoing in this case, and we're going to find out more details as time goes on, but struck a police officer. Then you go and read about some of the details here about what was happening when this person was pulled over. It says in one video, an officer wearing a hooded jacket, a baseball cap, and a tactical vest with a badge on it approaches the driver of a white vehicle with dark tinted windows. Roll the window down, roll the window down, the officer tells the driver. The driver initially rolls his window down and then kept rolling it back up. Why would you do that? If a police officer is telling you with very clear instructions, roll the window down, roll the window down, why would you do that and then roll the window back up? The police officer states, what are you doing? Don't roll the window up. Do not roll the window up. The officer pulls on the driver's door handle, which appears to be locked, and then draws a gun. Which, okay, a lot of people are gonna say, this is excessive use of force on behalf of the police officer. Why would you start pulling your gun on an individual who you are pulling over for, you know, not having a seatbelt during a routine stop? If I'm a police officer and I'm telling somebody, roll your window down, roll your window down, they proceed to do that and then start rolling the window back up, what am I going to think that individual is doing? I'm going to think that that individual is hiding something and possibly a weapon. Now, if I try to open the car door and the door is presumably locked, a lot of people are going to go, taser, taser, taser. The window's rolled up. The car door is locked. You can't get in the car door. Does it make sense, maybe if you are in the mind of a police officer right now, to pull your gun just in case this person is rolling their window up in order to pull out a weapon? And we have no idea what this cop is seeing in this moment or what the officer is recognizing is happening. But even if this was just an instinctual call, the officer would have been right because Dexter Reed did in fact have a weapon in the car and was going to fire at the police officers. So, okay. Let's keep reading here. The officer pulls on the driver's door handle, which appears to be locked. We saw that. Unlock the doors now. Unlock the doors now. The officer screams as another officer shouts the same demand. So now they're in tandem telling this guy, unlock the doors, unlock the doors. The driver apparently says, okay, I'm trying to. Seconds later, as the officer retreats from the vehicle, gunfire breaks out. Dozens of gunshots are then heard in rapid succession. Other body cam videos show at least two other officers firing toward Reed from across the street in a residential neighborhood. Both of those officers paused to reload their guns. After a barrage of gunfire ends, Reed's body is found lying face down behind the vehicle. He started shooting at us, an officer said in one of the videos. About a minute later, an officer examines Reed's bullet-ridden car. The gun's right there, the officer says, shining a flashlight into the vehicle. One officer was shot in the wrist during the gunfire and was hospitalized in good condition, Chicago police said. And now multiple agencies are investigating whether the officer's actions were justified. And they did, in fact, find a gun on the scene, which, interestingly enough, if you go and read something like this from the Washington Post, they in one sentence mention that, Reed, it's stated that Reed shot first. And then they go and give what they deem to be a play-by-play of what happened in the body cam footage and fail to mention in that play-by-play that he did in fact shoot first. And for some reason, the Washington Post, which is meant to be a reputable news source, leaves out the fact that a gun was recovered on the scene with an empty clip. How is that possible? And if you're reading these headlines that are telling you a black man is shot during a traffic stop, 96 shot fired during this routine traffic stop with a black man, what do you think the media is trying to get you to do when you read a headline like that? They want you to be upset. They want you to overreact. They want you to protest. They want you to riot. They want to promote a narrative that this country is breaking down, on the premise of race, that this is white officers who are targeting black men, when in reality, if this individual had just complied, rolled down the window, gotten out of the car, explained why he wasn't wearing a seatbelt, this probably would never have happened. But this individual decided to fire on police officers. Now, we can argue back and forth as to whether or not 96 shots in the wake of somebody shooting at you is excessive use of force, or if it's reasonable, or if multiple police officers needed to respond to the gun being fired. I would argue that we don't know what's going on in these cases. And if an officer screams out that the person inside the car is now shooting, I imagine you're going to do whatever is in your power to stop that person from killing your officers, especially when we have stories coming out today, like that out of Memphis, where an 18-year-old suspect just shot and killed a police officer in a shootout. So when you are in a situation like this, as an officer, where somebody is threatening your life, you have another officer who is already injured by gunfire, what do you think you're supposed to do? I'm pretty sure you're supposed to neutralize the perpetrator. And where they're trying to paint it out as if these police officers are racist, to me, it seems very cut and dry. Dexter Reed made a choice, a stupid choice. And when you make stupid choices and you play stupid games, you win stupid prizes. It seems as though this would have been a very normal traffic stop had he just complied with the officers and gotten out of his car or done whatever it is that they asked him to do. But no, that could not be the case. But the media wants you to think that they are targeting black men, that they somehow knew when they pulled this guy over that they were going to shoot and kill him. And the officers just got lucky. They just got lucky that Dexter Reed just so happened to have a gun in his car and just so happened to unload it on them when they were already intending to go and take this young black man's life. Very, very lucky day for those officers. I'm sure your average police officer wakes up every single day and goes, you know what? I want to kill a black man today, or I want to get in a shootout where other officers are injured, have my life threatened by a suspect just so I can what? Rid the world of another black man? Are we truly thinking that this is how police officers think? I guess so, because there's people who are pushing this narrative and sharing this and sort of equating this young guy to George Floyd, even saying things as far as like, oh, I know he had a gun, but they didn't have to use such excessive force in the wake of him having a firearm or him shooting at police officers. Y'all, make it make sense. I just had to clear up this story because it's just so ridiculous that the media will knowingly lie or omit information with a very clear intent to stoke the flames of racial divide in this country when we are just about to head into a new election cycle. And you know exactly why they're doing it. So I want to make it clear that that's what they're doing and clear that up for you guys. And you know, just as a little bit of advice for anybody who is in an altercation or not even a conflict, just a routine traffic stop with police officers, comply. I don't care if you know damn well the officer is somehow, you know, a bad apple within the department. It's probably within your best interest to comply with whatever they're asking you to do, especially if it's just to roll down your damn window. And those are my thoughts on Dexter Reed. Glad we could clear that up.
Yeah, and what's sticking out to me, just to put a button on it, is the fact that it seems like we've learned nothing in the past few years. It's like, and you know this better than anyone, Amala, how many times have you talked about this, the actual, you know, statistics from Roland Fryer, or look, when you actually look into the police incidents of police brutality, of fatal officer-involved shootings involving black men, the perception of the prevalence of those things is so much larger than the reality. And it's because of the dishonesty of the media. It's because they're less interested in giving you an accurate representation of what's going on, but instead promoting particular narratives. And it's just unsettling and frustrating to witness them continue on this path, even though it feels like it started to feel like, at least to me, that maybe we'd made a little bit of progress, that they wouldn't come in so overt with their bias, with their dishonesty when it comes to another situation that they are able to infuse this race narrative into immediately, that that's the instinct, that the way they phrase these headlines, that the way they present the stories. People pointed out that in most of these headlines, they're showing the photo of the suspect in his high school graduation photo, where he's very smiling and with his family, and not his mugshot from 4 months ago, which, make of that what you will, but it's just yet another little piece that you can latch onto to show the bias that's inherent in how the media continues to cover these things. And I don't want to say it felt like we were making progress, but it kind of did feel like, after the media had been called out so much for so much of the misrepresentations that they'd been doing, that they wouldn't immediately jump on something so vociferously like they have yet again. And it's just frustrating because it still feels like we're not any closer to reality and any closer to having more trust in our institutions, which we actually desperately need right now. And to your point, going into an election year, and yet here we are, man. It's just so sad.
Yeah, I mean, and this divide that the media is fueling by lying, or at least doing, you know, these lies of omission that they're putting in these articles and in their coverage of this story, they are causing more deaths. I cannot emphasize enough that this is not just lies that you're reading in an article that you go, oh, well, why did they put that there? Or, you know, they may have lied, but this doesn't really have any effect on society. It has a real world effect on society. I'm close with a few police officers here in LA, and you all know that in the wake of George Floyd, there were riots everywhere. How many people died in those riots? Over 20 people died in those riots, most of them being black people. So because they spun a particular narrative and because they injected and fueled like the fire of racism in this country, more people lost their lives than the one person that the whole case and all the turmoil was about. A police officer that I'm close to in LA was almost shot in the head and killed responding to the riots and protests that were happening in this city. And that would have been the death of a near and dear officer. Because people decide to spin these narratives and lie to the American public. And that's what they're attempting to do here with this Dexter Reed story. And unfortunately, you have to read through and read through and read through to make sure what they're saying in the headlines is actually false. And it is indeed false, or again, a lie of omission, because they're very masterful in the way they cover these things by telling you pieces of the truth that are not an entire reflection of exactly what happened in these cases. And you know how quickly these things are cleared up when you say he fired first? That's all you have to say. If somebody's in, he fired first. I'm sorry. That's it. He fired first. But they want that to be the last thing that you find out about cases like these when they cover them. And it is honestly such a nefarious thing to do with your reporting. There's such a lack of journalistic integrity. Your, you know, ability to be like revered as a journalist or to work for these publications should be revoked when you put out stories like this. And they have to know to some extent that this creates real, tangible harm in our communities, in the view of like relationships between police and the people that they are policing. It is so, so very harmful. And of course, as I said, we do have that story out of Memphis where a police officer was shot and killed. I'll show you that here. A Memphis officer killed, 18-year-old suspect is dead after shootout. And there we go. The officer's name is Joseph McKinney. Here we are, and I can't imagine this guy had a particularly good view of police and law enforcement, and now you have an officer's life lost. But let's talk about Dexter Reed, and let's fail to give the full picture of what exactly happened at that traffic stop. It's unbelievable that the Washington Post left out that there was a gun retrieved on the scene. Absolutely unbelievable. But I digress, guys. As you can tell, I'm very passionate about this subject matter in particular. And honestly, we're going to make that its own video and put it out for people to share, because I imagine there are going to be so many people either lying about this case and trying to do the hashtag say his name with this guy to fuel these different agendas that they have, or there's just going to be people who don't know the truth because the truth is not being given to them. And we need to make sure that that is not the case. Now, in our last bit of news here, don't you think it's weird that so many celebrities just end up having like trans and non-binary kids that they are parading around? And for some reason, you have celebrities who happen to get multiple trans and non-binary kids. I mean, what, we have Charlize Theron or Theron, you have Angelina Jolie, you have Megan Fox, you have Marsha Gay Harden, who I believe has multiple trans and non-binary kids, and they seem to sort of concentrate themselves in Hollywood. And when I mean in Hollywood, I mean as children of celebrities. Now we have this story that involves Ben Affleck, Jennifer Garner, and J-Lo, where now they have, well, Ben Affleck in particular, has now a trans daughter and a non-binary daughter. How this happens, I can speculate. I mean, I cannot be sure exactly how that goes about, but here is an interview, or not interview, article out of the Daily Mail that says Jennifer Garner and Ben Affleck's 15-year-old daughter, formerly Serafina Rose, debuts new name Finn. Now, apparently, 15-year-old Serafina has been, you know, going back and forth with gender ideology and all this stuff, I believe, for quite some time. They just got the debut of the new name at their grandfather's funeral because Serafina decided to introduce herself as Finn. Now, a lot of people are making this out to be, you know, her utilizing her grandfather's funeral in order to come out and make a big statement. It doesn't seem like that's what happened. I think she just took to the stage in order to speak to the audience at this funeral and to talk about her grandfather, and just started by saying, "Hello, my name is Finn Affleck." I don't think they were trying to take up the time to come out and make this bold statement in the place of this person's funeral. It just so happened that this was just the first public statement of the new name. So now Finn Affleck joins Jennifer Lopez's child, Emmy, who is non-binary and uses they, them pronouns. Now, the through line here does seem to be very left-leaning parents who take it upon themselves to espouse that left-leaning ideology quite often and make a stance. And oftentimes, these parents are extremely self-interested and love to talk about how unique they are and how wonderful they are and how hardworking they are, and seem to have a lot of narcissistic traits. I'm not accusing them of being narcissists themselves. I'm just saying they seem to have a lot of narcissistic traits, and then their children just, oh, I don't know how that happened, end up to be non-binary and trans, which is sort of the unique characteristic of the day, the unique identity of the day to have. Now, how exactly does that happen? I think it's kind of like a cocktail of things. One, it's probably the parents letting them know about this sort of ideology, influencing them in that direction, because they get to take on, you know, uniqueness points for having kids who identify as trans and non-binary. And maybe it's also a rebellious thing on behalf of the kids. I imagine if you're the child of a celebrity, you would probably struggle a lot with identity. You'd probably struggle a lot with trying to find your place in the world, trying to give yourself your own unique name when compared to your parents. And that there's a lot of strife when it comes to, you know, being the small version of J-Lo or Ben Affleck or Jennifer Garner. And that, I would imagine, just comes with a built-in identity struggle. And when you have an identity struggle, a lot of young people are jumping ship and heading into the whole alphabet soup kind of thing and taking up what are easy identities to sort of throw out to the public. Just say, I use they, them pronouns, or my new name is this. And it's a way of taking back a bit of your identity, making yourself unique in comparison to your parents. And then the parents get the little child accessory, which essentially is what a lot of them are doing. They're utilizing their children as accessories, and they get something to talk about how they have so much acceptance, and they can virtue signal and talk about how unique their children are and how this is the new fight of their era to protect trans kids and trans rights. It is sort of the perfect cocktail for having a child who takes on one of these identities, which is why I think we see several celebrities with not just one, but multiple trans and non-binary children. You'll have to let me know how you guys feel about that theory, but we have new celebs to add to the list, it seems like, all the time.
And we did ask y'all in a poll here, do you think celebrity parents are influencing their kids to identify as trans or non-binary? 94% of you say yes, and only 6% saying no. So certainly appears like we have a consensus, at least among our beloved viewership here, what is behind a lot of this.
Yeah, and I mean, who else do we got? I'm trying to think, because we got Dwayne Wade and Gabrielle Union. That's another one. I'm sure if I sat here long enough, I could think of more names. I should have prepared them.
Jamie Lee Curtis, I think, is one.
Yep, Jamie Lee Curtis has, I think, one trans child, and like loves to make a point of that whilst out in public and receiving awards and all these different things. The list is getting longer. I think at some point I need to like put on my investigative journalism hat and really go through a laundry list of celebrities and see just how concentrated trans and non-binary identities are within Hollywood, because I imagine it in no way matches up to the percentage points of where trans and non-binary appear in the general population. It's kind of like when you see those maps of trans and non-binary kids, and it's like, there happens to be a ton of them in Portland, and there happens to be a ton of them in Los Angeles, and there happens to be a ton of them in New York City. What's happening in these particular cities that would bring about like an acute concentration of people who are identifying as trans and non-binary? And I think we'd find the same thing within just particularly Hollywood celebrities with children.
Yeah, I saw someone in the replies to the tweet that was, we're reacting to here, said that the odds, based on the like incidence or the rates of gender identity disorder as it was defined before this explosion that we've had in the last few years, it was 1 in 9 million for a parent to have 2 kids with gender identity disorder. And so you could clearly see that there would be some sort of confounding factors, but that's just it now. Like, we just reacted to that video the other day about transmaxing, and now they're not even willing to delineate between, well, are you really a genuine trans person if you're doing it out of a voluntary desire to acquire the benefits of the opposite sex that you are transitioning to, even if you're not feeling any kind of gender dysphoria? Does that still mean you're a valid trans person? There's just so, the bar is so non-existent for identifying as something, and the self-ID and the gender affirming LGBTQ movement is so broad now that anything basically goes. So it just is, it's no surprise that we have such, like you were talking about the different factors involved. This has become so rampant. We've reacted to these headlines of saying like 40%, something like 40% of Gen Z identifies as LGBTQ in some manner. We've looked at other data that indicates that many of them don't even experience any kind of same-sex sexual attraction or anything like that. They'll just say something to, because it's convenient, or they're promised acceptance. And I think you're right in pointing out that a lot of this is just basic teen angst that young teenagers experience. They have identity issues and they want to find acceptance. They want to find belonging. And this is a new sort of, you know, like in my day, it was like the goths or the jocks or like find your little niche or whatever. And this is, you know, identifying as non-binary or whatever can be a shortcut that's presented to kids that, and it's reinforced by TikTok. It's reinforced by the LGBTQI plus whatever movement. It's reinforced by celebrities and in mainstream media and diversity quotas and all these films and Pride Month. And it's just like, no, is it really any surprise that we're getting there? But I think what this story highlights in particular is that the buck really should stop with the parents, and it is on the parents to be aware of forces that are out there trying to influence your child. And it seems like these celebrities, as we know, are more liberal-minded, more open-minded, but in this case it appears that they're being so open-minded that they're allowing this ideology to take hold of their kids and likely supporting that process. And when you couple that with some of what we're talking about earlier with the J.K. Rowling and her talking about the irreversible psychological harm and physical harm often that can happen when you push kids down this path, you're now, as a parent, walking kids straight into the arms of dishonest medical practitioners, as the new report out of the UK just revealed that there was basically circular reasoning of all these institutions affirming one another's conclusions and findings that made gender-affirming care the right thing to do, that made prescribing hormone blockers and things the right thing to do. It's all basically falling apart now. And the harm's been done, and you as a parent are just helped along this process, not even stood idly by, but pushed your child into it. I couldn't live with myself. So it feels like we're headed to a reckoning here, and yet I thought so with the BLM story.
Right, and then it's
the world that we live in just proved again that, you know, we haven't learned anything. So who knows, man, where this is going from here, but it's certainly alarming to look at.
Well, we know most kids grow out of this. I think there was a report that just recently came out about how, like, the vast majority of people are actually growing out of this identity. I think there's a lot of different factors. It's your parents support it, and then they push it on their kids. A lot of kids do it in retaliation to their parents. I know, like, Elon Musk's kid said, "I'm trans," and also, like, "F you, dad." It's kind of like, okay, I have a feeling that your identity might be mixed up in the fact that you hate your dad, which can, you know, I understand a lot of kids like want to have this sort of retaliation against their parents. And then there's like a uniqueness that comes with identifying with really anything that can set you apart from other people. I saw this TikTok the other day where this guy was like, shout out to, you know, all those bisexual girls and their boyfriends. It's like, yeah, a lot of people will just like slap on an identity that makes them unique, but doesn't really have any greater impact on who you are as a person. Like, all you have to do to identify as non-binary is say I'm non-binary and you should refer to me as they, them. There's no like proof or anything that needs to be, you know, sought after in order to take on that identity. And the same can be said for a lot of other identities and things that are rolling around right now. And this is not to say that all people are doing it for these subconscious reasons and they're not real people who truly think that they're non-binary or truly think that they're trans. It's just to say that if you're seeing an upward trend, like an exponential trend in people taking on these identities, maybe there's something else going on, and maybe there's something else outside of identity that they are getting from taking on this new persona and pushing it out into the world. And on that note, we're going to get into your super chats. Let's talk about J.K. Rowling and Dexter Reed and J-Lo and Ben Affleck and whatever. You know, it's no surprise. If you guys have ever watched an interview of J-Lo, it's no surprise that her kid thinks that she's non-binary. The only person who's ever in the room when J-Lo's in the room is J-Lo. So I imagine to be her child, it would be very, very difficult to set yourself apart. And we all know why. My goodness. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, just watch one interview of J-Lo. It's literally all you have to do to understand.
And didn't she come out with like two movies recently that like explore open sexuality and just like the Everything Everywhere All at Once, where she's going galaxy to galaxy to have different lovers and stuff like that?
Oh my gosh. And like the TikToks where she's staring at herself in the mirror and like tousling her hair, and she's like, oh, this hair reminds me of when I was just a young girl in the Bronx. And like, she's so, there's nobody who loves J-Lo more than J-Lo.
About to say, find you somebody who loves you like J-Lo loves J-Lo. All right. Daniel Santana is back in first place on a Friday. He says, hello, I have hope that each of you are doing well today.
We are doing
happy
well.
Friday. I feel like my Friday's incomplete.
I know. We didn't get our happy Friday from Daniel Santana, but we appreciate you, Daniel. A lot of people were like wondering where you were at in the chat because your super chat came a little late. They said you were sleeping or working, but here you are.
Is he okay? Someone go check on it.
Yeah.
Stephanie Fonseca says, just woke up from a nap at work during lunch. I saw a workout shirt that said LGBTQ stands for lats, glutes, biceps, triceps, quads. Love your content.
That is very funny. Yeah. It definitely does not these days, but that is very creative.
What's your workout split? Oh, I'm on the LGBTQ plan. Timothy W. says, hey, Amelie and Taylor, I love tuning into the show while I write. I'm working on a historical fiction that has over 75,000 words.
Whoa.
My goal is a 100,000 by my 18th.
That is very impressive.
You're not even 18 and you're writing that much?
Yeah, I know. That's wild. You can listen to people talk and write at the same time? That is a feat. I mean, I could maybe listen to people like sing and a little bit of music and write at the same time, but I don't know that I could listen to a podcast and write at the same time. That's very impressive.
Yeah, you must. That's IQ 180 over here, able to process things that are being talked about while also being creative and
that's wild.
Original. But congrats, man. That takes discipline to write.
It does.
So that is very cool to hear. Alex Lesher says, happy Friday, everyone. Hope everyone is having a good day and weekend. I'm going to see Shrek 2 in theaters tonight for its 25th anniversary re-release.
Heck yeah. Shrek is iconic. I love that for you. Do you get like a green popcorn bucket? That'd be so dope. Wow. If that was happening anywhere near me, I'd be there.
Yeah, I guess it's old enough now too to where like, you know, you might have grown up with Shrek as a movie, like as a kid, but were too young when it was actually in theaters.
Yeah.
So it'd be cool to be able to go back and experience that. I saw their re-releasing a bunch of Christopher Nolan movies in the coming like weeks or months. So I got it marked on my calendar. I want to go see Interstellar and maybe Dark Knight.
Yeah,
again,
that'd be dope.
Inception.
And people are so hyped once, you know, the movie's already been out and everybody's seen it. They're like, you know, making noise while things are happening and like gasping. I went and saw I love Twilight. Don't come for me. I absolutely love Twilight. And any excuse I have to watch those films, I'll watch them. But they did like this whole circuit where they played all the Twilight movies in theaters. And the amount of girls that were just there, like freaking out and screaming like Team Edward or Team Jacob. It's just so fun to experience once it's like has its whole like lore built into it and its cult following. Very fun thing to do.
Actually, Aridin says, I've recently went from being a left-wing activist to a center-right gay guy. Your, along with Amir's videos, have really helped me with that.
Aww.
Thanks, especially in regard to trans children. Thanks, Amala.
That is so awesome. I'm glad that we've helped in any way. Shout out to Amir Odom. If you guys are not following him currently, go definitely give him a follow. He puts out some really great videos that he just like does all on his own, and he's very well researched. So yeah, shout out to Amir. Love him.
Joy says, I'll be visiting LA next month to see Jordan Peterson. Amala, while I'm there, do you want help with the P.O. box? Laughing emoji. Also, any tips for a first-time L.A. visitor?
Oh, any... Okay, so first of all, I do have the P.O. box paperwork. I literally just need to go and take it and do it. But this is me. I think I've mentioned I'm very much a procrastinator. So if you didn't know that about me, you know that now. As far as L.A. recommendations... Oh, gosh. Of course, I have 1,000. And the second you ask me, I can't think of one. Do you have any, Taylor?
I mean, I will say there's so much that it really depends on like
where
you're into and really where you are. Because people mm-hmm. say they're going to L.A. and they're going to like Disneyland. And that's like an hour away from
right.
you know, Beverly Hills.
Right.
So depending on where you're staying and stuff dictates a lot. But if you're in L.A., I mean, I guess it's worth driving through Beverly Hills. Hollywood Boulevard is a huge letdown. I recommend if you want to go see it, like stay in your car and drive through.
It's not that bad.
I mean,
you'll definitely smell some interesting smells and see some interesting homeless people, but you can totally get out of your car.
Yeah, I don't know. I worked on Hollywood Boulevard for 3 years and saw some crazy things. But
yeah,
I mean, you'll be fine for the, you know, more than likely. But it's usually just mourning you. It's like dirty and you'll smell weed and there's lots of homeless people and nothing's very like cool or attractive. But it's cool to see the Chinese Theater, Dolby Theater, all that type of stuff.
Griffith Park.
LACMA. Griffith Park is great.
100% go to the observatory.
You're into hiking at all, it's an easy hike, but it's still really pretty. LACMA has like the famous little LA lights. Downtown is kind of meh. Like if you have like a cool restaurant you're going to or something like that, but downtown's not like the greatest. Yeah. And then Santa Monica. I'm a huge West Side guy. I love Santa Monica, Venice. Of course, Venice is really nasty now too. But
go to the pier.
Abbott Kinney. I don't know. You could go on and on. Do you have any in particular that you would
recommend? Mine's just the observatory. If I came to LA and I like wanted to do something fun that's like peaceful and beautiful, and there's just like people like out reading and hiking, and the observatory is super cool, and the museum inside is really dope. Griffith Park, I feel like it's just like a peaceful, nature filled, beautiful view. Once you get to the top, you get a great view of just LA in general. Like you said, Runyon Canyon is also good if you just want to like hike and see LA, like see the entire city.
You can
city.
See the Hollywood sign from there, and you can see the Griffith Observatory from Runyon. So it's kind of cool. But yeah, I mean, there's lots to see.
Nice.
It's a good place to visit.
It is.
And live, arguably.
And live. I love living here, to be honest.
Yeah. Okay. You got more than you bargained for with that one. So
yes, you did.
Enjoy your time in LA. Brittles 1991 says, I finally caught alive to do a super chat. Thank you for providing a voice of reason to younger generations. You are wise beyond your years. Keep it up.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. That is so very sweet. And I'm glad you could catch your live for the first time. I'm always astounded by the people who every time we go live are catching it for the first time. So that's so cool.
Yeah, so many, especially as we're starting. It's like, so many of the chat comments are like, oh, I actually made it for one.
Yeah.
It's like, we're here at the same time. Every Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
But I love it that you guys are just circulating in. Love it.
Just mark your calendar. We can't rely on YouTube's notifications, I guess. So
set
a timer on your phone.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it now. Hey, Siri, set a reminder to watch Amala at 1 p.m. Pacific on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And hopefully your phone's heard me say that and scheduled it. Let me know in the chat if that worked. Diva Dawn says, the civil case is the reason OJ finally did go to prison. He broke into a memorabilia store to steal back his Heisman, which was sold to pay the judgment. Amala and Taylor have a fabulous weekend.
Huh. Okay, I didn't know that detail. I knew that he was, didn't he get like 30-something years in prison for armed robbery? Is that what we're referring to there? And then there was something about like a $30 million... lawsuit in regards to Nicole and Ron, I think, but you'll have to let me know in the comments down below. A lot of you, I didn't realize there are so many people who are like dedicated to the OJ Simpson case. Like they never let that go. And they are like private investigators. They have looked into every single detail of this case. I have like a very distant view of everything involving that, and had to like brush up a lot of my information and when this news broke. But some people, they have a chip on their shoulder over that case, which understandably so. It's a tough one.
Yeah, I watched the, like, I think it was HBO put out a like 5-part documentary / dramatization of it, and it had like Ross from Friends and some other famous actors on it.
Oh, interesting.
Watch that, but I'm rusty on the details of the case now. So I guess I need to rewatch. RP Savage says, "Hey gang, traffic stops and entering a home of a suspect are the most dangerous situations. Try being a cop if you think it's so easy. You'll have no idea what it's like unless you're Amala and Taylor, LOL."
Yeah, no, it's tough. You guys know I've been on many a ride along, and I would never, ever, ever, ever want to be a police officer. It is the most like anxiety inducing job I could think, you know, right now of having. And I've told you the story. If we were just one time on a ride along responding to a call about like a fight that had broken out at a convenience store, and you show up in the police car with the lights on and there's like 20 people, most of whom are just like watching this fight take place. The cops get out of the car. You're getting rushed by 20 people. You have no idea who's who, what's what, who's fighting, if there's weapons, anything like that. And then you have to just empty-handedly walk up to these people and figure out what's going on while everybody's screaming at you and telling him he did this, he did that, he needs to be arrested. Other people being, no, it's the other way around, or he's drunk, or he has drugs, or all this stuff. And you're supposed to, as one person, figure out what's going on. Oh, I would have such anxiety if that was my job. I just wouldn't be able to, won't be able to do that.
Yeah, man. Shout out to our brave men and women of law enforcement
yes.
for doing that. Monty Jose says, "What we call race is merely ethnicity / skin color. Using the term race only further divides us, in my opinion. Our race is human. That's it."
Yeah, it's there's many ways you could like you could break it down, and it's such a superficial, this negative. We've fallen in a negative pit that we cannot get out of. And yeah, the future, if we're going to progress out of this, is a colorblind, race neutral future.
Kennedy says, "Amala looking good and speaking facts as always."
Thanks. I appreciate it. You guys always hype me up in the comments. I don't know how to take compliments typically, but thank you very much.
But you do know how to take insults with clapbacks, like
that
Violent
is true.
Games learned that this past week.
I'm always ready for insults, not so ready for compliments.
Monty Jose says, says, "Telling black people that police are after them almost guarantees events like Dexter Reed's death. If he hadn't been fed the narrative, he might not have fired first."
Yeah, there's so many things going on. I think we're going to find out more in the coming weeks. There's a lot of things that make me wonder, like, why would you immediately turn to pulling your firearm? Like, maybe he was trying to conceal the firearm before he rolled the window down, and then that didn't end up working out, so he, like, you know, makes a decision to go ahead and shoot the police officers. Who knows what he was involved in at the time, or what else was in the car that could have possibly gotten him in trouble. I think there's probably more going on to this story than what we know, and we may never know.
Frau Kanzerlin says, "Would you guys mind telling my 6-year-old Fiona happy birthday? I'll write down the timestamp and show her when I get home."
That is so sweet. Happy birthday, Fiona. Hope you are having a fantastic day full of fun and family and, you know, cake or, you know, edible arrangements. I always do edible arrangements on my birthday, so I get a like a flower bouquet of chopped up fruit, and that makes my life. So I hope you are getting whatever makes your life happy today, Fiona. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Fiona. Get some cake and ice cream. None of this,
chopped up fruit stuff.
We did just get a $50 super chat from Accursed, who says, "It will never be colorblind so long as a class of people exists that profit off of race."
Yeah, it's difficult because there are a lot of people who really benefit from these racialized narratives going back and forth. It's more about us little people deciding that it no longer matters to us and choosing not to engage with the people who are trying to profit off of those narratives. But it takes a lot of like awareness and education and
fighting your the sometimes visceral reactions that you can have to stories.
Taylor Fan Club says, I slightly agree with you, General. I don't think they are stoking the flames to push more racism. I think these people are like Sonny Hostin and are completely drowned in their own ideology.
It's a multitude of different people. You're going to have so many different people under the umbrella of pushing this narrative. It's going to be people who are convinced that this was a racist act no matter what. It's going to be people who hate cops. It's going to be people who hate white people. It's going to be people who are intentionally pushing this narrative to fuel divide and to benefit off of it. It's going to be people who want you to vote a certain way in the coming election, and they want these stories to be out there and painted in a certain light for you to see them. There's many a motivation, both conscious and subconscious, of the people who are sharing these stories.
Onion says, people don't realize how fast it adds up. A Pew Pew today holds 17 to 21, just a couple of blue boys responding to that scenario. It takes seconds to hit 90.
Hit 90 what? Oh, you mean with like how many shots? Okay.
Magazine. Yeah.
Right. And I still don't know. Like 96 is the number that's circulating right now. Some people are saying that Dexter Reed fired once and then this whole thing ensued. Others are saying, you know, he completely emptied the clip. They did have a gun with an empty clip at the scene that was recovered from the scene. So who knows how this is going to parse out, how many shots were actually coming from him inside the car, how many shots came from police officers. But yeah, I mean, that you would rack up that number pretty quickly. I think the story here is that they got to that in 41 seconds. So again, you can like debate how many officers should have been shooting, at what rate were they shooting? You know, there's a lot of just mistiness in all of this and a lot of, you know, not knowing what a situation entails and what exactly you're responding to when you're responding as a police officer.
Yeah, I did see, by the way, some of y'all in the chat were, I guess, gun enthusiasts. And There's evidently a distinction between a clip and a magazine. I'm ashamed to say I don't know the difference, but if y'all want to clarify that in the chat, let us know.
Yep. I believe it's a clip in the reporting, but y'all have to let me know down below. You can fact check me.
Derek B says, Amala, do you have time to react to the Mr. Menno puberty blocker song with us? He also has a short vid on Sam Smith. Hope you interview him sometime.
I will have to check it out. You know, I get nervous when people are making songs about stuff like this because sometimes they're just not good. Like, this is why you'll never see me like watch Tom McDonald on this channel or anything like that. So I'll have to check it out first and make the decision.
We also could get flagged for copyright too for doing that. And then It demonetizes the video today. So That's something else to be aware of. But yeah,
Maybe.
You got to go listen to that song.
Yeah, I'll have to listen to it first, and then we'll let you know.
Say something nice if you like. And only if. Roga says, sup, want to get your opinion on passive-aggressive racist comments on videos that show a black person committing a crime. Comments use code speech like basketball people 13/50, usual suspects.
Yeah, I mean, I understand where these comments are coming from. They're more like stereotypes, I would say. It's unfortunate that I think because we're not honest about the rate at which these things occur from the black community, people feel the need to like put out these more abrasive comments when stories like this do occur and when they come out. I don't think it's particularly helpful. I'd rather you eloquently and with intellect state your opinion on the crime that is, you know, circulating on the internet or what you're talking about, rather than just throwing out these phrases that are meant to indicate your views on black people. But that's the internet. So,
yeah, if you're trying to add value to any discussion, you want to be clear in what you're saying and precise in what you're saying. And a lot of times using these different phrases or whatever, and they're not helpful because it's like, are you trying to just display a measure of contempt for people, or are you actually contributing something of value to advance the conversation?
Right. And it sucks because a lot of it's a response to the media not telling the truth. Like the reason people say like usual suspects is because the media won't tell you what who the suspects are, like what they look like and stuff like that. So it's back and forth. I don't appreciate any of it, to be honest.
Let's see. Anisha says, I watched the transmaxing video and felt so incredibly sad for that person. Mm-hmm. He probably never felt loved, and it seems like he didn't feel worthy of it.
Yep. I think so, 100%. It's people who are not loved or appreciated and don't get to experience that, especially in a romantic sense. And then they take these drastic measures in order to achieve that goal. But then it's like, okay, is it true romantic love if a person loves you for something that you're not? And that's the question you kind of have to ask yourself. But yeah, it's tough. I do empathize with them.
James Tenvilla says, when I was a kid, there was a commercial for a show that had the quote, you want to be different just like everyone else. I think of this about the neo-trans quote-unquote community.
Yeah, everybody wants the thing that sets them apart, and it's kind of what makes us all the same. We all kind of want to be different and have these little distinctions about ourselves. Luckily, we do have that just by virtue of like being born in our unique bodies that are, you know, owned by us as individuals. But we feel the need to differentiate even further and set ourselves apart even further than what we already are.
Emmanuel says, hey, y'all, my first life playing devil's advocate, Second Amendment supporter. I may have a similar reaction to the kid if a guy on an unmarked car and civilian clothes approaches my car with a gun in hand.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they said that the police officers did have some sort of marker vest, on their vest police, that said yeah. Police and
badge.
Yeah. So I don't know, again, how that was communicated to this individual or whether or not that was something that he could see or could not see. So we're going to find out more. I also don't know what is the state of his ownership of that firearm, whether or not it was legal, illegal. He does have a mugshot that exists on the internet. And I don't know if that was for a misdemeanor or a felony. And that would not allow him, I believe it's a felony, to even have a gun in the first place. So there's other things I think that need to be revealed here, but I can understand what you're saying. If a random group of individuals approach you in your car and you are a gun owner, you might be, you know, at the edge of your seat with your firearm as well.
Yeah, and I know typical protocol for police when any kind of confrontation ensues is the first thing they do is identify themselves as police. Mm-hmm. Like if they're coming in your house or, you know, any sort of escalated situation, they're supposed to say, police,
right,
freeze, whatever. So we don't know if they did that necessarily based on the footage, but it's also just generally probably unwise to open fire on five people who are pointing a gun at you when you're stopped inside your car.
Right. Yeah.
Probably not the best move in that situation.
Right.
Ace in Spades says, race is a social construct anyway. We all have the same genetic ancestry.
Yeah, I mean, it is largely socially constructed, which is why a lot of people say, like, being transracial makes more sense than being transgender, because, you know, if anything, race is something that's kind of moldable and changes, and different people of different races refer to themselves as different things. And, yeah, I agree with you.
Miroirs Jumeau says, can't you do both, write eloquently, but include didn't do nothing as appropriate?
Didn't do nothing. Is that in reference to these stereotypical phrases that people are using? I mean, you very well could. I don't know that it reinforces the eloquence of your messaging.
Rachel Chapman says, I usually don't catch your lives because I work a 9-to-5, but I took a self-care day. Mm. You two make great background noise in the garden.
Hey, love that. Okay. Getting some gardening done while listening to the podcast. Love it for you. I wish I had a garden, but I live in LA, so there's no garden happening.
I'm only slightly hurt that we're the background noise and the garden isn't the background noise. Like, you think of the garden as a place where you're hearing like birds chirping and wind blowing through the trees, and that's the ambiance. That's the background noise.
I'll take it. We can be your background noise.
All right. Y'all are adding a few more super chats here at the buzzer.
Sure.
Onion says, a clip is almost a literal clip that holds Spicy Boys used in old pew pews. A magazine uses a spring to push Spicy Boys out the top.
Okay. I saw we got so many different definitions for what a clip and a magazine were down below in the chat. So I'm like, I didn't want to read any of them because you guys were giving a different characterizations. But we do have many, many gun enthusiasts in our comments. I still don't That didn't give me much clarity.
I mean, I guess if a magazine is a more modern device that has a spring that pushes each bullet up towards the top.
So it was more than likely a magazine is what that comment is insinuating.
I guess so. Okay. Oh, and it looks like Celtic is also saying, giving us another definition of the modern. If it's a modern firearm, it takes a detachable box magazine, most likely. Firearms fed directly via clips are antiquated tech like the Mauser C96.
Okay, so he
C96 homily.
Yes, of course. He either had a really old firearm or it was a magazine. So it sounds like magazine is going to be the correct term. Thank you guys for the clarification on that point. And I believe that was our last super chat. Guys, thank you so much for watching the show. Leave your thoughts in the comments down below. How do you feel about JK Rowling and saying that, you know, save your apologies for the detransitioners to Daniel Radcliffe and Emma Watson? How do you feel about Dexter Reed and the news surrounding his death at the hands of police officers in Chicago? What do you think about J-Lo and Ben Affleck and Jennifer Garner and their trans and non-binary children? Plus, we covered O.J. Simpson's passing. Did he do it? Did he not do it? And a weird clip out of CNN where a woman talks about his legacy and his representation of Black people. Of course, leave your thoughts in the comments down below. I encourage healthy debate, so do get out, but do so respectfully. And if you like this video, like, subscribe, click the notification bell to be notified every single time we're live. That's Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 1 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Central, 4 p.m. Eastern. Plus, we post videos for you guys every single day. Tomorrow is about fat phobia and the body positivity movement and whether or not brands have to make size-inclusive clothing all the way up to 4X, 5X large clothing. You'll be able to give me your thoughts tomorrow. Can't wait for you guys to see it.
Your size has more X's than Taylor Swift. And are you included? We did get one from Quazakule that I missed. And so the buzzer. Sorry, Quazakule. Says, hi, Amel and Taylor. I hope y'all will have a wonderful weekend. Y'all wonder how I could have an entire day and you would be asleep. I'm in the future.
Wait, what? I'm confused.
I read the words that he wrote. Do y'all wonder how I could have an entire day and you would be asleep?
Quazakule? I'm not sure I know how to answer your super chat today. And this is not...
Because you're like across the world in another time zone?
Right. Are you in Australia or something? I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. You'll have to unpack that one for us.
I'm ending the show thoroughly confused by that.
But it was nice things you said.
Super chat. But it was very nice things that you said, you guys. Thank you so much.
He's in South Africa.
Okay. He's in South Africa. Okay, got it. That makes total sense. I'm glad that we cleared that up right at the buzzer. Guys, thank you so much for watching. I will see you tomorrow. Have a fantastic Friday, fantastic weekend. Bye, guys.